Library with your host, Raven Starr. Seeker's Library explores tools to cultivate self-awareness and the development of our highest human potential. Join the World Bridging Network of Truth Seekers here on Seeker's Library. Hello, Truth Seekers. This is your host, Raven Starr, and I want to thank you for being here in whatever time-space nexus you are listening. My guest today is Jacob Rhythmic Dragon. Jacob is the Director of Communications for the Foundation for the Law of Time and has shared his knowledge over the last 16 years with thousands of people around the world. Having studied directly with the founder of the Foundation for the Law of Time, Jose Arguelles, he also served as his trusted personal assistant since 2003 and now works directly with Stephanie South. Jacob emphasizes the exploration of the direct experience of the codes of time, and from 2016 to present, he has written more than 50 essays sent every 13 days via his 13 Moon Calendar Essentials newsletter. Welcome to the show, Jacob.
Thank you very much, Raven. It's a pleasure to be here with you. I want to wish you a very happy White Electric Wind Day today, our day for communication.
Yes, thank you for choosing this day. It's so perfectly synchronized. So when I first started investigating the Mayan Dream Spell, I of course turned to the lawoftime.org website, and that's where I found your free video series, 7 Ways to Embody and Apply the 13 Moon Calendar. And I found it really helpful, and I actually did all of your recommendations.
Awesome.
And it made a huge difference in my understanding of the 13 Moon Calendar, so thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. I'm glad you went through all those. I really feel with the 13 Moon Calendar, it's new information, it's new knowledge, and sometimes it can be kind of heady, or you're just kind of getting into the nuts and bolts and figuring out what does all this mean. And it's nice to just have ways to just put it in your body and actually do something with it. I'm glad to know that you enjoyed that.
Yeah, it was really practical advice. And I'm going to link in the show notes to this awesome free video series, because for anyone out there that this might be a new calendar, but as you say, it's really more of a map and guide to exploring archetypal forces within your life. But in any case, this tutorial series is really helpful. And as I mentioned in your bio, it's really all about the direct experience of the codes, which you guide people on how to start that. So I'm really starting to get that, you know, as I check 1320 sync every day, and I have a bunch of different calendars around my house to remind me what day it is. And I've even been trying my best to dress in the color of the day, but I also wear a lot of black, so it's not always the case. But yeah, it takes some time to really just live it, you know?
Yeah, it does. What you're doing is perfect, because you're kind of allowing yourself to immerse in it. Because after all, I mean, what we're taught about time typically is pretty dull. You just learn how to know what if it's a weekday or the weekend, and just kind of how to read a clock. And there's nothing else really said beyond that. It's just, you know, show up to class on time and know if it's a school day.
Right. And I want to dive deeper into this, because this whole idea of what we're used to, right, and what we were taught, I've personally have done my very best to explain the 13 Moon Calendar and the Dzogchen cycle to people. And what I've noticed is it's being received like a little TMI, like too much information. And while it makes so much sense to me, this Gregorian calendar makes no sense. And I personally, through this podcast, I want to help with raising awareness and shifting the collective from 1260 to 1320 time. But I'm still finding that people aren't fully understanding me. And I think it's all in the pitch. So from the director of communications himself, I am sure you have explained this a million times. But for the millionth plus time, would you please give the listeners the elevator pitch of this amazing system? Like, what would you say?
Well, you know, The 13 moon calendar is a path of, and the information is kind of something to get you in tune with what you might call resonance, or just to be in tune with who you're with at that moment. And so a lot of it really has to do with being present with the person who you're with and kind of getting a sense of how receptive are they to this? Because I know this can be a deep rabbit hole. So just kind of real gentle baby steps. So I guess I would say, you know, you touched on some of the terminology. So of course, like, you know, the Gregorian calendar is the calendar that everybody knows and is taught. It's named that because its last reformation was by Pope Gregory the 13th. So that's why it's called Gregorian calendar. And as you mentioned, it's completely irrational and irregular, but it's something that we just unquestionably agree to use as a standard of measure. And it's completely non-standard. You have things like September means seven, but it's the ninth month. October means eight, but it's the 10th month, and so on. And then, you know, when you start making these things conscious, it kind of then unpacks a little bit of the history. And then you kind of see that it's this whole wonky kind of Frankenstein of a time measurement tool where, you know, July and August is because Julius and Augustus Caesar inserted their months and they wanted them to be longer months. So they have 31 days and they literally took days from what's now February. And so that's why February only has 28. And so it's just this whole mishmash of stuff that has, you know, the meaning's totally lost. It's almost just like a completely arbitrary memorization of words just so you can like get around in the world. But the fact is, like, time is so fundamental to our existence, and there's many cultures throughout history where their calendar and say their perception of time was intimately connected with how they saw their connection to the dream that they live in, to the universe that they live in, to the cosmos that they're a part of. So it was much more meaningful. And you'd have, you know, cultural calendars that are anchored on things like the, you know, the equinoxes and the solstices, which are actual, you know, measurable astronomical things, like actual real physical points in the cycles of nature. And so by, say, organizing their cultures around this, it innately brought them in tune, say, with the earth, or an innate kind of feeling of connection to the earth. And that's like in vast contrast to just, you know, 30 days, half September, April, June, and November. No one else knows the rest. And sometimes there's leap day. It's just like... So that's just kind of, you know, to explain the difference in perception of time. And so, like, the purpose of the 13 moon calendar is the mathematics of it are based on, of course, the Mayan calendric system, which is a vast mathematical system with intrinsic mathematical harmony and consistency, and which synchronizes with all kinds of celestial and terrestrial cycles. And the 13 moon calendar that we call, say, the dream spell is a modern formulation of these mathematics and these cycles so that everyone on planet Earth can learn it, and everyone on planet Earth can actually opt in to experiencing time much more in tune with, say, the cycles of nature or as time actually is. And so in the 13 moon calendar, everything's even and balanced. You have 13 months of 28 days. So every single month, you know, which we call a moon, because the moon orbits the earth 13 times in a year. So each moon is 28 days. So you always know exactly the seventh day of the moon is also going to be the seventh day of the week. And the first day of the moon will always be the first day of the week. It doesn't shift around. Like today, you know, on the Gregorian calendar, I guess it's Friday, but you have no idea what day of the week even September 23rd is going to be, let alone what was it in July or June 23rd. You don't even know what day of the week. And so the law of time comes from this point of view saying, like, look, like, all this irrational irregularity actually has a profound effect on the human mind. And that is to kind of disconnect it from the universal frequency of synchronicity. So what does that mean?
What does that mean?
So, like, with the examples I was giving of, like, the days of the week, you're trying to project forward and backward in time, even just to make practical plans with this calendar, the 12-month Gregorian calendar, it's crazy making. It's kind of stunts the ability for the consciousness to maintain continuity over long cycles of time. So this creates a type of subconscious frustration and a kind of unnecessary complication. And so from the point of view of the law of time, all this, you know, being the fundamental, say, macro programming device of the whole planet, you know, I mean, every country in the world uses this calendar. Of course, some also use their cultural calendars, like the Hindu calendars and the Hebrew calendars, these Islamic lunar calendars and so forth, but they're still also organizing their whole civilization, say, about according to this crooked calendar. So like the accumulative effect of, you know, 7 billion human beings on this irrational, irregular, unexamined standard of measure creates, from the point of view of the law of time, is really the root of, say, all the chaos that we see in human civilization, whereas, you know, all other, say, ocean civilization and forest civilizations are pretty well balanced. It says this is the human being's the only one who's kind of who relates to time in this way, in a not only an irregular way, but also a mechanistic way with like the clock. From the point of view of the law of time, this creates an artificial timing frequency. It's kind of like you're trying to tune into a radio station, but you're like way off. And so all the songs sound out of tune. Everything's all whacked out. So, and it's because of this frequency that we're kind of all collectively agreeing to organize ourselves by. That's, say, the artificial timing frequency. But the discovery of the law of time due to José Arguelles' work in the late 80s, early 90s, and right up until his passing in 2011, elucidates that there is a universal timing frequency, which literally is the fourth dimension, where you have, say, like the third dimension is the physical world, anything we can experience with our senses. The fourth dimension is, say, a higher dimension, but it also contains all the dimensions, say, within it. And it's the fourth dimension, which is time. And it's not like a linear past to present kind of a thing. It's a universal matrix of synchronicity. So like the frequency of time is what keeps everything synchronized in the present moment. Us talking right now, like we don't have multiple versions of ourselves like flickering in and out of existence and deconstructing and falling. We're right here in the moment. And it's all because the moment is held together by this frequency of synchronicity. So like when the law of time talks about time, like with a capital T, say, that's like the universal frequency of synchronicity. And we say it's universal because everything in the cosmos, like the universal norm, is actually synchronicity. But for us beloved humans, we know when we have a synchronicity, say you think of a friend and she calls you, or you open a book and, whoa, I was just thinking of that, or that's exactly what I needed to see. Like those give us this exciting charge, you know, because it's such a novel kind of departure from, say, you know, day-to-day stuff. And that feeling, that exciting feeling, is actually, say, like what it feels like to be swimming in the sea of synchronicity. It's like we're dipping our toes in every time that happens, and that ocean is there just waiting for us constantly. And it's so, that's part of, say, like the invitation of the 13 moon calendars. Like you'll if you want to experience time differently, here's a different measurement of time, so you can actually experience time differently. So I don't know if that would be a very long elevator trip. I mean, we must be in Dubai or something, in some ridiculously tall skyscraper.
Well, and the 13 side of it, like the 13 moons, 28 days, I'm finding that people really can get that. Mm-hmm. It's when I start to introduce the Zolk'in side, the 260-day cycle.
Yes.
That's when I start to lose people a little bit. So would you share more about that?
Yeah, that's good you pointed that out. So yeah, the 13 moon calendar has the measurement of the year, the orbit of the Earth around the sun, 13 months of 28 days, plus one day at the end of the year called the day out of time, and that's how you get 365. But simultaneously, there's the 260-day Zolk'in cycle that you mentioned, and that is 260-day cycle, literally like the yardstick of fourth dimensional time. So the universal frequency of synchronicity can be expressed, say, numerically as a ratio of 13 to 20. So that'd be like the radio station 1320. And if you take 13 times 20, you have 260. And so the 260-day cycle is the perfect representation of that frequency. And the 260-day cycle is where you had alluded to before, where, say, the archetypal forces of your experience kind of come into play, where the 260 days is made up of combinations of 13 numbers known as galactic tones, and then 20 solar seals, or 20 symbols, which are kind of like 20 archetypes. And so each archetype has, say, a permutation through all of the different numbers, the galactic tones that I mentioned. And so that creates 260 unique, what you might call cosmic archetypes, or fourth dimensional archetypes. What this kind of connects with is how time as the fourth dimension is also coextensive with the imaginal realm. And this is talked about a bit in the Cosmic History Chronicles by José Arguelles and Stephanie South. But to put it real simply, it's like the fourth dimension and the imaginal realm are coextensive. They're the same, they're kind of the same realm or same reality. And so this is where, when you're following the 260-day cycle, every single day has a specific code, which is kind of a launching pad for you to kind of dive into your imaginal realm and time, dive into your self-reflection of the day. And it's also where you obtain, say, your galactic signature based upon the date of your birth. So, yeah.
And we all have a galactic signature.
Yes.
And now that you've been living this for so long, do you even celebrate your Gregorian birthday anymore? Or do you focus, and you and your family, on the galactic signature, your galactic spin every 260 days?
I think that's a great question. Actually, I do still celebrate my birthday because it's still a celebration of my orbit of on Earth around the sun. So I get my birthday every year, or every solar ring, if you want to use new terminology to make it more conscious what we're talking about. It's a ring around the sun. So every solar ring, I get a birthday. And then every 260 days, I also get a galactic birthday.
So,
your solar birthday.
More celebration.
Yes, exactly. So it's not necessarily a Gregorian birthday because, say, like on the Gregorian calendar, it's my birthday is April 29. So on the 13 moon calendar, that's always on the 26th day of the 10th moon, or the planetary moon. So it's still, I still have a 13 moon calendar birthday with that. Mm-hmm. So when you know your galactic signature, you know, that kind of gives you a personal reference to kind of step into it. And in terms of, say, elevator pitch for people, that again kind of comes to receptivity. You know, are people interested in knowing their galactic signature? You know, are they interested in thinking about time differently? You know, and there's a lot of, say, different facets that can be used to introduce it. But the galactic signature can be a fun entrance into it as well, which also, you know, provides you with a profound kind of tool for contemplation. Like, you're a white lunar wizard, right?
Yes.
Lunar wizard. All right.
1054.
And we're here in the lunar moon on the first day of the lunar moon. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of got your lunar
vibe
going on. Yeah, it's got your tone. So this whole moon is like the lunar tone. And so, like, mm-hmm. you're the lunar wizard. So you can kind of, you know that you're a lunar wizard, and so you're kind of exploring what that means to you. And so as you go through the lunar moon, it's kind of like you have, again, a kind of resonance between your personal lunar tone and the fact that these next 28 days are also coded by the lunar tone.
Mm-hmm. And we're in a white wizard new 13-year cycle, right?
That's right. Yes. A big shift we just had. In the 13 moon calendar, every year has a galactic signature as well, based on the first day of the year. So, you know, say 28 days ago, it was white magnetic wizard. And that was the first day of the 13 moon year, which corresponds to July 26th. And so that encodes the year, a white lunar wizard or white magnetic wizard year. And the magnetic tone is the first of 13 tones. And so that means we're starting a whole new 13-year cycle. And since the first year is white wizard, that's the whole 13-year cycle is, say, touched by the wizard as well.
We need this new cycle,
I feel. We do, yeah. I mean, the red, you know, before this, we had a 13-year cycle of the red moon, which was also awesome because red, you know, there's no bad signatures at all in the 13 moon calendar. At the same time, like, red moon is purification. We say we had 13 years of that. So it's like, okay, let's go into the white wizard where there's some timelessness and enchantment and receptivity to emphasize.
Right. Yeah, I want to ask you more about the galactic signature, because when you look at your signature, you see other glyphs surrounding it. And you have, in your video series, you encourage to kind of look at your friends and family. And mm-hmm. I ended up charting not just my partner, but all of my housemates. And we're all so connected. Like, my partner is my guide in my chart. And my other housemate is my hidden talent?
Yeah, the power, the occult power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and my best friend is my compliment, and my other housemate is also a white wizard. And so it's just so interesting to see how all the people in my life are coming together in this really, like, cosmic, magical way where we are all meant to be in each other's lives. And absolutely. I loved looking at my galactic signature and confirming that. So you talk about, like, the cosmic archetype. Yeah. And just, I'm still kind of understanding all the surrounding archetypes around my main galactic signature, but just by my life experience of doing that, I'm getting it, you know, in that way.
Yeah, and what you describe with your roommates, their housemates, is really an excellent example of how, like, say, one of the, say, slogans of the Law of Time is that the Law of Time makes conscious what was unconscious or what was previously unknown or unconscious. And so by, say, decoding and finding the galactic signatures of your housemates, you made conscious this factor of, oh, there's actually literally, okay, a fourth dimensional mythic structural kind of harmony between all you guys, and that's in you're together. Mm-hmm. So, and that's kind of when you know your galactic signature, that's your starting point. And then as you're following the calendar every day, you know, every day has a galactic signature as well. And then this is where you begin to, say, cultivate relationship to the signatures themselves. You know, and I like to emphasize really that, like, it's very subjective, you know, and like what it all means and everything, like it really just comes down to your experience and your understanding. And that's why I also kind of promote a patient path when learning the 13 moon calendar, because really it's a matter of you're following it every single day. And it's like you're getting to know really something that is alive. And so each day, you know, you see what the galactic signature is. Like today is white electric wind. The day that we're recording this, I activate in order to communicate. And so we're certainly doing that. But, you know, then 20 days later, it's going to be another white wind day. And you're going to have a different day and a different experience. And this is kind of you getting to know the white wind. You know, 260 days later from now, it'll be white electric wind again. And then you'll be even more intimately knowing the white electric wind. You're cultivating your understanding and the feeling of these archetypes, because each person's going to have a unique orientation to each of them. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about the 13 moon calendar is that, you know, each solar seal and galactic tone, they just come like, say, the base, you know, your base kit or your base toolkit or whatever, just gives you three key words for each one. Like in your case, white wizard, timelessness, receptivity, and enchantment. And then the lunar tone, stabilizing, challenging, polarizing. Mm-hmm. So, and those words, and I like to just emphasize just those words themselves, because those are going to mean so much to, you know, something different to each person. And they each, you know, like polarizing might mean something to you versus someone else. And then as you go, your understanding of that, say, code or that idea will deepen. And so the same becomes true as you're following the calendar each day, as you're tuning into each of those codes. And being that the codes are, like, say, the key words, when I say codes, talk about the key words of the signatures and the solar seals and galactic tones, being that it is just these, you know, three single words, it's that the 13 moon calendar is, you know, it's a tool. It's communicating something from a higher dimension. It's communicating patterns, rhythms, structures, you know, even, say, truths that exist in our multidimensional reality. And so we're using words to try to convey, you know, what these things are. And so the most flexibility you can give yourself, but to just explore like the codes as they are represented, then that's really where you get kind of where the rubber meets the road, you know, because then you're starting to get really into where you're experiencing and feeling the different archetypal forces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for me personally, I actually want to talk a little bit about death because
you're guided by the power of death.
I'm
right?
Guided by the power of death. And when I first today, read that,
not to interrupt, but today is also guided by the power of death. So,
right.
All right.
Yeah. And so this is a good time for me to talk about it because when I first read it, it really irked me. Like in the beginning, I yeah. really had to sit with all of my matrix conditioning for a while. And I actually came across an essay that you wrote on death. And I really loved what you wrote because you call out the scientific community a bit, which I loved. And it's important, you know, to not demonize death or not make it like this horrible thing. It's not. And yeah. I have really been sitting with that ever since I first read my galactic signature. And what does this mean for me being guided by the power of death? I'm still sitting with it. My intention is to live a positive polarity life and evolve and grow and love as much as I possibly can so that I am ready for my ascension in death. That's kind of what I'm working with now.
Wow. That is very beautiful.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And I think that's the other thing is we want to know immediately, you know, in this world, like, what does that mean? That scientific kind of more, yeah, just analytical kind of rational mind. We want to just know, what does this mean? And this is actually more of this beautiful, elegant dance of just experiencing it, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's like the regard for the mystery is kind of waned a little bit, which is kind of tragic in a way, because I mean, it's, you know, we just want to, you know, what's the answer?
Mm-hmm.
So much, I mean, the fact is, like, any new discovery, any new thing we learn, the mystery itself multiplies exponentially. And so to ignore or deny, like, the mystery is, we're cutting ourselves out from a huge part of, say, this whole experience that's kind of 13.7 billion years in the making for us, like, so that we could be here and experience, like, what is this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and death is like one of the most profound ones, you know. I think it's a part of life, and it's, you know, it's, you can't have one without the other. And, you know, of course there's all kinds of stuff out there too about our DNA is not meant to die and things like that. I'm not fully versed in all that information, but for me, like, my orientation to death is like, it's something profoundly sacred. It's like, you have a finite time here to do what it is you're going to do. And I think that's part of, like, the beauty of it. I mean, of course, for me personally, I feel like, you know, the soul exists eternally and all that. And not that I know what happens after death per se, but I have a feeling that that's, like, to me, I think the soul is eternal. But I think, say, in this incarnation, there's going to be, that death is probably something really that we don't, there's probably a lot more to it than we really even know, you know?
Mm-hmm. And in the same article I'm referring to, you also mention meditation and actually link to your other essay on meditations. And you talk a lot about this natural mind meditation that Jose taught you. So related, but not related. And I'd love for you to explain the natural mind meditation a little bit more for people.
Well, sure. Yeah, definitely. And I think that it's definitely related to death.
Yeah.
Cause say,
okay.
Yeah. I mean, even like, say, the Zen teachings is, you know, when they speak of, say, the most, say, quote, accomplished Zen masters that they, you know, are dying in every moment, you know, during the tea ceremony, every moment is they're dying right there every moment as they do whatever they're doing. So meditation is certainly, and I think that's actually really essential when it comes to learning the 13 moon calendar, some form of meditation. And natural mind meditation, I mean, you know, Jose Arguelles was for 16 years, a practicing Buddhist, you know, Tibetan Buddhist. And he, you know, fulfilled all the Vajra protocol and all this stuff, you know, so he had a very long experience of profound meditation, and that was a big part of him. That was one of the most inspiring things to me about him, is every day, you know, he'd get up super duper early, you know, in like 2 or 3 a.m. or whatever, and just goes into just meditation. It really came through in his being, because he was just so present and completely thoroughly authentic, and not to mention just inspired beyond measure. He was such a prolific and creative person. So when we did a seminar in 2005, the Foundation for the Law of Time organized one, and it was like a fundraiser seminar, and Jose presented the natural mind meditation. And prior to that event, me and the other staff members would meet with him weekly to practice natural mind, and he'd talk to us about it, to kind of get our massage our brains about it a bit. Yeah, it's a profoundly simple meditation technique, and anybody can do it. It doesn't require any training, you know, it just requires your willingness to follow through. You just simply, like, I'll tell you, the technique is you sit with your spine erect so that you're awake and you're not slouching and dozing. Sitting on a meditation cushion is good, because that just kind of keeps you sat down. And for people who maybe can't sit on a meditation cushion, it's certainly fine to sit on a chair. And you just place your hands on your knees, and you have your eyes open. And you're looking kind of towards the floor, not like straight down, but just kind of a natural relaxed location for your eye, just to kind of look kind of like down in front of you. You just observe your mind, and you kind of, the breath is is kind of, say, a key point of attention where you're just observing your breath. You're not trying to sit there and breathe intentionally, like breathe in, I'm breathing in, I'm breathing out, I'm breathing. You just watch the breath, and you'll start to notice thoughts arising. Usually you just, why am I doing this? What am I doing? is this right? Is anything happening? Or, oh, I need to do this or that. Or what did I say? Or am I forgetting something? Your mind will just churn out thoughts like crazy. And as soon as you notice, oh, this is a thought, you know, then on the next out breath, you just let it go with the out breath. And you just repeat that's the whole of the technique. You just continue to do that. And at the moment where like the thought dissolves, there's this gap between the thoughts. And that's really, say, a glimpse into, you know, you're at the natural state of your mind without conditioning, without thoughts, without concerns or worries, or maybe even context. I don't know. It's just your mind as it is. And that's, you're getting little glimpses into that. And that's similar to, say, like this synchronicity experience where you have these novel experiences. You think of a friend and they call you and you get this charge. You're getting a taste, a dip of, into the ocean of synchronicity. Same thing with natural mind meditation in a way, as you're, the thoughts will just come as a torrent, and that's just totally natural. They just come and go like clouds nonstop. The key is just to recognize, oh, it's just a thought. It's just a thought. And, you know, you'll have all kinds, the mind that churns out thoughts will be so clever, and it will come up with thoughts that it really will literally make you think, I need to get up now. I need to get up and go do something now, whatever it might be. But if at the outset you commit and say, okay, I'm going to light this little stick of incense, or I'm going to put a timer, I'm just not going to move until that's done. And if you can really stick with it, you'll just see how the mind is constantly trying to whip you around with the thoughts, you know, and so then you kind of, you know, can even develop a sort of compassion for your own mind, how it's just, you know, it's trying to, the ego or whatever, you know, it's trying to figure things out. And God bless it, but we're going to just experience the mind right now for a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, developing that compassion is really important. And I know, yes, sometimes I'll think of something, right, and go down this rabbit hole and then get to this seemingly completely unrelated thought. I'm like, how did I get here? And then I'm like, mm-hmm, oh, and then just following it back, like, whoa, yes, that's how that was triggered. That's how that's connected. Like, so crazy, whatever it is. It's just interesting. Like, if we can watch in just more like a wonder, mm-hmm, kind of state versus getting too caught up in it. Yeah. And just a question about like the open eyes, because I'm not used to that. Mm-hmm. Would, yeah, focusing on like a candle be also possible, or is it really just like a more unfocused kind of thing?
Yeah, I think, so the idea in natural mind meditation with the eyes open is that just so all your senses are awake. You know, if eyes are closed, there's a tendency to easily start, say, visualizing, or, you know, because you're thinking in images and stuff like that. It's to kind of take that booby trap out of the way. From my understanding of it too, is to connect your experience of your natural mind with your waking reality. Because the whole idea, of course, is you take that natural mind with you throughout the rest of the day. It's like you want to be Chogyam Trungpa, his book called Meditation in Action. You want to be meditation in action. And when you're going throughout your day, you don't have your eyes closed. So it's, you know, it's to connect it with your natural mind with your day-to-day reality. And like a candle or something like that could end up being like a distraction.
Okay.
The eyes open technique too is a technique in Zen Buddhism called Dzogchen. And that's also the same, it's almost literally the same technique. You know, we just present it as natural mind meditation because, so anyone can learn it, you know, no matter what their religion or language. It's just you know, here's something you can do. Everyone can experience a natural mind. And here's like the basics, you know, technique for it.
Mm-hmm. And I joined your Galactic Spacebook group. You have kind of meditation group, and I'm in.
Oh, awesome. Oh, thanks for joining that.
Yes. Yeah, so for anyone out there that wants to do that.
It's great to share. And like what you described about the tracing your thought back to its source, that is a very real thing. That's such a fascinating process. You can end up so far from just where you were.
Yeah.
And you realize, wow, this one little thought like triggered this whole rippling cascade that even, I don't know, for me, it seems to end up on a tangent way off from even what the original trigger point was.
Big time. I learned to just laugh, really. It's a cosmic joke. So I want to go back to You mentioned that you have been with Jose Arguelles. You were his personal assistant, which must have been an amazing experience. And I would love for you to talk more about how you came to be his PA and then eventually how you got to the position you are in now.
Sure. Yeah. Well, in 2002, I learned about the 13 Moon Calendar and maybe kind of did the same thing as you. I went to the website at the time and then just kind of devoured the information up. And there was an event in Idaho where, because see, in that time, in 2002, it was in the midst of a 4-year campaign called the Campaign for the New Time. And it was, the vision was leading up to 2004, where there'd be a great calendar change, you know, so there was a lot of, say, almost even activist type political activity to really say, like, look, we need to change the calendar. This one's nonsense. Let's just get on something that makes sense and get back in harmony with nature. So the event in Idaho is at a magical place called the Gnome Isle. It was for people who were kind of involved in say, the World 13 Moon Calendar Change Peace Movement. And so that's where I met Jose. And then from that point, I just kind of was offering my assistance, like, hey, what can I help with? I'd like to help with the website or whatever. And they had me doing a few things here and there. And then eventually they opened a gallery and a kind of a staff house in Ashland, Oregon. And I was just volunteering for my house in Michigan at the time. And he said, hey, we got a house and a office in Ashland, Oregon. You want to come and work here? He said, absolutely. So,
wow.
I mean, really, it was definitely a privilege and a very blessed, you know, probably just very lucky to have been in the right place at the right time to be able to be willing to help and kind of stick with it. But it wasn't just me. It was me and my friend Cornflower, who's now a musician, and another friend named Alan and Jesse. So we had a team of people who were working together, and we were holding down the office and helping with the publications and getting the books printed and stuff like that. You know, handling inquiries, making sure that pocket calendars were made each year so we could just keep blasting them out to everybody. And I don't know, I guess just naturally I just always stuck with it. When we had to change locations and things like that, I just kept working. And so in terms of personal assistant, I mean, you know, it was doing whatever we needed to do really for like the Foundation for the Law of Time, which, you know, is his nonprofit. And so it was doing design work and communications and things like that. And really just anything you'd need help with, he and Stephanie as well, who's now the creative director of the foundation. And yeah, it's always just, it was a super, super high joy always. You know, he would come into the office and just by the time he was leaving, everyone was just in such an elated state, probably laughing hysterically. By the time he was, you know, done telling us whatever he needed to tell us that day or asking us whatever practical matter needed to be done, he was just so full of love constantly and really just, yeah, the highest integrity person I've ever had the privilege of knowing. So he was super duper fun and yeah,
very monkey,
extremely
right?
Blue spectrum monkey. Blue spectrum monkey. He definitely had the playful vibe.
Yeah, it sounds like a series of synchronicities and just your own offerings and life experience and passion, right, for this work just has led you to be where you are now, which is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's so true. And it was always so inspiring to do whatever needed to be done, you know, knowing that we're trying to get the consciousness of planet Earth back, you know, in tune with nature and with the mystery and, you know, with the fact of what we're really doing here and to promote like a vision that can uplift people and realize that, hey, you know, what we're doing now isn't the only way of doing things. And there's a lot of other options out there. So, you know, we're kind of entrenched, say, in the current status quo or whatever, but that doesn't mean that at any moment, you know, the highest vision could just come flooding down on us and everyone becomes ecstatically inspired.
Well, I'm on board and I want to see this happen. I signed a change.org by 2020. Let's change this. So I want this to change. I don't think it's healthy to stay on 1260 time any longer. And we've entered a new age. It's time. It might take some time, but the more that we can all, you know, learn this system and feel into it every day, like you say, and experience it.
Yeah, and what it really, like you'd mentioned before too, that how compassion is so important, it really kind of comes down to that too. Like say, you know, of course, we'd love to see, say, quote, the powers that be make a referendum and change the calendar, and that's an amazing vision to hold. At the same time, you know, I feel it's important to hold on lightly because what it really boils down to is each of our own individual experience. And that's kind of like the 13 Moon Calendar is a tool. It's a tool and an offering for you to say, deepen your relationship with your own multi-dimensionality and to kind of shine the lights on maybe parts of your life and your experience and world that maybe have been in the dark or maybe just haven't heard or been too in touch with for your own growth and peace and development and inspiration. Because of course, yeah, really change will come from each person changing and each person's love, you know?
Right. Yeah. It's all about the inner work. It's the as above, so below. The inner is reflecting the outer. Everything that we're seeing going on in the world today, whatever judgments have ever come up in our lives, we've played a part, you know? So the more we can do our own work, the better. That's, I'm all about that. So aho.
Absolutely.
And I wanted to ask you about this word that is used a lot in the Law of Time literature, and that is the noosphere, which defined as the Earth's mental sphere. Mm-hmm. And in your latest newsletter, it was really beautiful. I could just feel how life-changing and transformative this trip in Mexico was for you and for everybody who went. And you said it acted like a noospheric acupuncture needle deep into the recesses of my heart. And so poetic. Wow. And so I'd love for you to share more about this word and also a little more about your transformative trip over the new cycle transition.
Okay, sure thing. Yeah, the noosphere, like you said, it's Earth's mental sphere. So just like you have the atmosphere, hydrosphere, lithosphere, biosphere, the noosphere is the Earth's mental sphere. It was a word first coined in 1926 by some scientists and further developed by a scientist named Vladimir Vernadsky, and even by a Jesuit philosopher, Teilhard de Chardin. It's the notion that evolution of life on Earth is going towards a point like what Chardin called like an omega point, Vernadsky called a biosphere-noosphere transition, where the life on Earth becomes self-reflective. And say like from the point of view of the Law of Time, it's the human species. And really, I mean, it's also in alignment with Vernadsky's thoughts on it and Chardin's, but it's the human species who represents the self-reflective mind of the Earth. Like, we can know that we know what we know we know. And we can reflect upon our reality. And so it becomes a kind of radical redefining of what it means to be human. You know, if we just imagine the Earth, say at this point in history, and this point in the Earth's history, now there's human beings on every speck of land that they can live on. And so this, the mind sphere of the Earth is almost literally a sphere now. It's every, wherever a human can be, the human is. And where the human is, there's also the mind. And so the noosphere represents, say, the unified one, say, collective mind of the planet. It's a definitely a very deep topic. There's an excellent book I'd recommend about it called Manifesto for the Noosphere. It was actually Jose Arguez's last published book. But I think that is just profoundly succinct. And, you know, anyone can, if you want to know about the noosphere, that's the book you can start with, because it covers all the bases, and it does it in such an extremely clear way.
I just bought it.
Oh, awesome.
I literally bought it yesterday because I saw your other essay recommending it. And I was like, okay, yes.
Yeah, it's worth having. Mm-hmm. It's so good. And yeah, you see that like the noosphere is kind of a stage in the evolution of planetary life. And so we're kind of, you speak in terms of we are a noosphere becoming conscious. The interesting, kind of just a fun thought experiment that any, you know, listener can take with them too, is like, say, if you're interested in the noosphere, just remember, anytime you think about or talk about the noosphere, that is literally the noosphere making itself conscious.
Hmm.
Because that's what we're doing. Like, this is the mind of the Earth saying, oh, I am a self-reflective mind, and I have all these, you know, say 7+ billion different unique expressors and or synapses or whatever it is. And we're thinking about the fact that we're thinking that we're here. And you can have a really interesting conversation with anyone if you start thinking, okay, well, what does this mean if it's all one unified mind? And like, what would it be like if the noosphere became fully conscious or operational? Would we know all each other's thoughts? Would language even be necessary? Would thoughts even take on a completely different form because we're like kind of this one unified thing? And of course, we'd all still maintain our own unique individuality within that context. So How does that work with, you know, a unified planetary consciousness? It's a fun topic to just hang out with for a while.
That excites me so much. Everything you just said, and that kind of feels like ascension to me. Like people talk about that a lot, but that's feels like that's what graduation truly would look like.
Yeah. Yeah. And like the subtitle of the book, Manifest for the Noosphere, is the next stage in the evolution of human consciousness. So yeah, it's like graduation. And the Noosphere, you know, according to the law of time as well, is it's a fourth dimensional, a third, fourth dimensional function. So it's like a circuit between third and fourth dimension as well, also up to, say, higher dimensions. It operates on the frequency 1320 as well, being that it's a fourth dimensional function. So this also becomes part of utilizing the 13 moon calendar, where everyone following it, say today is white electric wind, whoever's following it is looking at the galactic signature each day. Like there's all these registrations, you know, little lights lighting up on the surface of the earth of everyone who's reflecting together, synchronized about these archetypes and what it means, say, to them. It's like a collective synchronized type of realization process that kind of goes hand in hand, I think, with the Noosphere becoming conscious. So that's a little bit about the Noosphere. And then the event we had in Mexico you'd asked about, right?
Yeah.
It really came about by a dream that Stephanie South had, and you can see on her blog website, 1320frequencyshift.com. I'm not sure the title of the blog, but if you go a few issues back, I think you can see the blog where she describes the dream and then kind of the call she put out for, hey, this dream pointed that we should do this event. And it was to have two events, one in Palenque in Chiapas, Mexico, in the Yucatan Peninsula. And Palenque is also known as Nachan, or House of the Serpent. And it's the place, it's one of, say, the most exquisite ruins, I guess, but the word's leaving me. It's also where was discovered the tomb of the Mayan king, or say kind of like time traveler, even Pakal Votan. His sarcophagus lid was discovered in 1952 there. And it was kind of one of the most exquisite archaeological discoveries ever, where they found a little tile tube opening at the top of what's called the Temple of Inscriptions. And then they realized the tube went down somewhere, and so they excavated and they discovered there's this sarcophagus lid in there with really very delicately rendered artwork that's totally saturated with mystery. We had an event there. It was 4 days. It was called A Call for the People of Oma, and then there was some other, I forgot the full name. In short, it's a time for, you know, people to, OMA is an acronym that means original matrix attained. So it's kind of like the idea of remembering the original template, or remembering our original state. And so it was a time to come together and just, and really share. It was a deep process, and Stephanie South shared each day of those 4 days. On the fourth day, we had a galactic renaissance where several of the people who were artists shared their art with the group. We also had that same day a cacao ceremony. You know, it was really like no other event I've ever been to, like say seminar or something like that, where you go and there's a program and you're learning something specific. It was really more of just an experience, everyone being together, and almost seems like a dream kind of thinking about it right now. But it was, yeah, it was profoundly magical and activating. And then those 4 days were followed. There was a travel day, and then the next day was the day out of time. And on the travel day, everyone was traveling to Mexico City to Teotihuacan, which is the place where the Pyramid of the Sun is in Mexico, close to Mexico City. So everyone traveled from Palenque, and when we got on the airplane, the Palenque airport's pretty small, and pretty much the whole airport was just our group. And we got on the plane, it was just almost all us. I think there was maybe a handful of people who were just like, who are these guys? The whole plane was filled with us, and the co-pilot, his last name was even Arguelles, you know, so we're all just really on this high synchronicity wave. Just a kind of uncanny experience. So that was a travel day, and then we had the day out of time celebration.
And that's all about forgiveness, or is it many things?
Yeah, it's many things, and forgiveness is a huge part of it. The last day on the 13 moon calendar, because 13 months to 28 days is 364, so you have to have one day at the end to get your 365, and then the next year starts the day after that. And also by doing that, it keeps all the days of the week and the moons perpetual. The day out of time is the Planetary Peace Through Culture Festival and Day for Universal Forgiveness. So it's celebrated all over the world. It has been since the early 90s. I think 91 was the first day out of time. I might be mistaken. It might be 92 or even 90. I can't quite recall. But it's celebrated all over the world and in many different ways. You know, sometimes they'll have anything from dance parties to, you know, globally synchronized meditations. Like in Taiwan, I think it was last year on the day out of time. it might have been the year before. Time is stretching for me, but they had like a 10,000 person attendee, like globally synchronized meditation for world peace of the Rainbow Bridge meditation, which is, you know, to visualize the electromagnetic field of the earth as a rainbow of harmony healing everything. So to put it super briefly, so have events like that, or just people coming together and creating art, or even like public cultural celebrations. Like what we did in Teotihuacan was a purely ceremonial type thing. There was hundreds of people, I don't know how many, but we started in one area and we formed a huge circle, and we did the what's called the prayer to the seven galactic directions, which is kind of a
that printed on my wall. I love it.
Yeah, it's a powerful prayer, and the thing I love about it too is, again, it's kind of transcultural. It's like it's something where no matter where you're from, it's, you know, touching. So we did that prayer, and then we marched through Teotihuacan and climbed up the Pyramid of the Moon, and there was music, and there was a whole other group of, say, like the Rainbow Nation as well, present, the South American peace movement, the Rainbow Nation. They were also conducting ceremony on the Pyramid of the Sun while we were on the Pyramid of the Moon, unbeknownst to us. So it was like this synchronized ceremonial call, and then like all kind of mushed in together, and it was, you know, music and a big drum and circle. So it was super duper magical. And then the next day we had, say, structurally maybe a more traditional type event with speakers called Encoding the Galactic Future, steering the time ship. So we're looking at Earth as a time ship. We want to steer it to the best timeline possible. And we had seven incredible speakers. And I would actually recommend checking out 1320frequencyshift.com to get a full rundown of who all spoke and kind of more about that, because Stephanie South wrote a great write-up about it. We did an opening ceremony with Alberto Ruiz Buenfil, who created the Rainbow Peace Caravan Movement, the Rainbow Nation Peace Movement in South America. And he's done so much work for decades on behalf of peace and cultural revival. He did a beautiful opening ceremony. We had people from over 40 countries, so there was so many different cultures represented, and it was really inspiring to see how, like, the law of time being kind of, say, a galactic type of information or something, it's like no matter, inspires people from all different cultures. And so we're able to create an event where, you know, you have a Chinese Sufi woman, you know, speaking the prayer to the east, and you have a Muslim woman speaking a prayer to the north, and you have, let's see, who else was there? I can't remember who did the west and south, but that's just part of the opening ceremony is what I'm describing. But it was so powerful for that. You know, there was such a unification of culture. It was really moving. Then speakers came and blew everybody's mind, speaking about, you know, the future of healing and, say, the future of alternative energy, the future of DNA and medicine, and the future of telepathy, and, say, the future of the peace caravan, things like that. So it was a place where people came together and held a vision together, and it was really really truly magical.
Wow, that sounds amazing. And I really hope you guys do more of these events, because I would love to be a part of them. Yeah, that just sounds magical.
I hope so too, and that would be awesome to have you be a part of it too. It'd be so fun.
Thank you so much for your dedication to this path and for helping explain and communicate all there is to know about the law of time.
You are so welcome, Raven. I thank you for the invitation. Congratulations on the launch of this awesome podcast. I think it's really great what you're doing.
Thank you so much. And I just want to ask you, is there anything else you'd like to comment on? Anything you wished I had asked you that you'd like to mention?
Well, I guess I could say, you know, if you want to learn more, you can, I, of course, have my free video course, and that website is newtimecourse.com, and you just join my email list, and then the video course comes to you automatically. And also at lawoftime.org, lawoftime.org, you can, I think on almost every page there near the bottom, there's a sign up to the newsletter there. We send out a newsletter every 28 days, kind of talking about the moon that we're going into, and Stephanie South writes, you know, kind of a meta view of what's occurring at that present moment and in time. And that's where we announce things like those events and stuff. So we don't do a lot of spam. We also don't sell a lot of things. You know, we sell calendars and each year. So it's like once a year we have an announcement about that kind of thing. But the main thing is communicating every moon to kind of stay in touch and help everyone who's, you know, wanting to stay on the 13 moon calendar, feel connected and kind of keep on the vibe.
Perfect. All right. Well, thank you again. So many blessings to you. And Thank you, all my truth seekers, for listening. In the Kesh.
In the Kesh. Thanks, Raven.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Seeker's Library. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, leave a 5-star review, and share with your friends. And if you want to stay connected more, please visit seekerslibrary.net and sign up for my email list. You will receive the free Intentional Life Roadmap, which is packed with resources from all of the various systems, all in one place, and start your journey of contemplation. My greatest wish is cosmic peace. May we harmonize in beauty, unify for a global conscious evolution, and deeply accept ourselves and everyone else through the process. Sending love light to you all, in the Kesh, Raven Star.